All right. I've got something really exciting to talk about today.
Oh God, hit me.
So someone's parking in our space outside our house who doesn't belong to our house.
Is that what it is? Someone's parking in your
number. That's not what it is. Yeah, so this is one thing that really annoys me, because our house is new. We've got like a parking area outside the house. Yep. So we've all got two parking spaces each, and people park in our spaces all the time, and it does my head in.
Are they numbered? Oh, no, they're numbered spaces.
They're numbered,
okay,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
different.
They're reversing now. I think they've heard me.
Sometimes you get people who live in like a terraced house or like, you know, like a semi or anywhere where like they don't have a drive, but they think that the space outside their house is like objectively theirs, even though technically it's actually, oh God, this is fucking boring. What was your thing that was going to be good?
So the excitement that in my
Please.
Life, bees.
Right.
Bees have become the excitement in my life.
In what way?
20,000 bees, I might add. 20,000 bees. So I was sat working away because I work remotely from home. And I was in a meeting and I looked out the window and I noticed there was, no joke, hundreds of bees buzzing around my window. you can imagine the excitement, the adrenaline that rushed in my veins at this.
Did you go outside and fight them all?
No, just wait, because this story is good. And then I looked out the window and I noticed the bees basically covering the neighbor's fence. And I thought, that is very, very weird. Maybe the queen's on the move and they were following her. And then half an hour later, they were just gone. So I thought, oh, fair play. Like, it's just a swarm of bees. They're probably just...
Just a classic bee tornado. Get them all the time.
Classic bee tornado, but with a twist. So I went... So Claire goes to work on a Thursday and we go and pick April up from nursery at the end of the day. So she came by to pick me up after I'd finished work. And I went out and on the neighbor's windowsill, there was... a cluster of bees. I don't know what you call them. Probably
a gaggle.
Two foot wide. Just thousands and thousands of bees had congregated under his windowsill. And they had to get like this guy out. It wasn't an exterminator, because he came out and he was actually just stood there staring at them for ages. And he was like, I reckon there's about 20,000 of them there. And I was like, Jesus Christ. And
so what's going on?
I was like, well, what do you do? Do you like... Do you have to smoke them or whatever they call it to like make them go to sleep or something? Went, no, we'll just put them in a hive and collect them and take them. As you do, we'll just collect 20,000 bees. So they came along and did this, and then there was, you know, maybe 100 or so bees knocking around out there. This was 2 weeks ago on Thursday, so like 10 days ago. And today I was walking the dog, and this woman comes walking towards us and goes, don't go down there. There's hundreds of bees again. There's hundreds of bees. You can't go down that path because I'll get you. And then she told me that there's someone just up the road who has beehives. So some guy has obviously got bees, and I don't know whether he's freeing them because he's like, he wants to take over the world, or there's some sort of AI bee, or whether he's just really irresponsible. But then later on tonight, the neighbor's car had hundreds of them swarming around his car. So now the bees are coming back towards the house again. And then my wife was outside and she was talking to him, and he was like, I'm going to play football tonight. So I'm just going to get in the car and drive off, and that'll get rid of them. So basically, we're getting attacked by thousands of bees, and my neighbor just drove his car down the road with hundreds of bees just on it.
It sounds fucking terrifying. At first I was like, oh, this is cute. Lots of bees. Like, maybe he's getting into beekeeping. You know, we're all getting older. But like, the idea of like having to fucking drive a car so the bees come off it is awful.
but now we're finding, because it's warm, so we've got windows open a lot. There's just dead bees in the house all the time. We just walk along. It's like someone's sending us a message. I don't know if you've seen Candyman, but I'm not convinced I'm not in Candyman.
Yeah, it's just, your life sounds wild right now.
Proper exciting. Actually, do you know what? I'm going to get you a picture of it, because I took a picture of the neighbors.
Drop it on Instagram. If you listen to this and you don't follow her Instagram, make sure you have a look on Instagram and you can see the bee. Holy shit. Yeah, I've just seen a picture of that. God damn.
And that happened in about an hour and a half. It just happened.
That's terrifying. So you've got like what happens to an irresponsible beekeeper? Do like the cops come? Do they?
Well, I said that to Claire. I was like, if these bees keep escaping, I'm going to have to call the police. And she was like, what are you going to say? Someone is letting bees free.
Call the police.
I mean, not 999, obviously. 1-1-1-100, whatever it is.
Excuse me, look, I know you're all like busy at the moment, but there's some bees outside. Also, I murdered my wife.
Yeah. I've got some inside information that a beekeeper up the road is freeing the queen. He freed the queen.
That sounds like terrible slime. Do you know, my life, I was going to say my life has been more interesting because I had to buy a new toilet seat the other day, but I actually don't think it is that much more interesting now that you've said that.
Oh, we should have started that. Yeah. Isn't it fun putting a toilet seat on? I hate
it's
that.
It's fucking awful, man. It's awful. Why don't toilet seats really last a long time? I think one of the answers to that is that I'm too fat. But also, why don't they last a long time? Like, and why is fitting a toilet seat so difficult? There's like so many different ways to do it, and it's just like...
Yeah.
If it's next to the wall, like you can't reach your hand around to like properly screw it in, it comes loose. Just like, oh, fuck.
The toilet is never in an easy position to put a new toilet seat on. You've always got to like bend your arm around and then...
Tell you what, mate.
God knows what's behind there.
If I ever redo my bathroom, I'm doing the toilet in the middle. It's going to be like a circle pit.
Not in the middle of the wall, in the middle of the room.
It's going to be like, you can like move around it. I quite like the idea that, you know, people put like these big clawfoot bathtubs in the middle of a room. And like, you know, people don't even fucking question it when people put it in their bedroom, which looks bonkers to me. I'm going to put a toilet in the middle of the bathroom, and you're just going to be able to walk. It's like 360 meals to walk around it. It's going to be awesome. And my seats are going to be tight. You can guarantee that.
The tightest toilet seat.
Mate, you don't even know how fucking tight my seat's going to be. The other thing that was really interesting is I was laughing at you the other week.
Thank you.
Yeah, velvetizing milk. So I was like, velvetizing milk sounds very strange. But the other day I found myself buying a milk frother for my coffee machine. And I got to tell you, I'm a convert, Kieran. I'm a convert to that velvetized milk. I can't.
Are you an oat milker?
It varies. Kind of switch it around. So does oat milk work particularly good?
Well, we find that Oatly is really the only one that will do.
Right. Okay.
That is the only one that will do in this house.
That's expensive as well, Oatly.
Not for a man with my level of income.
Is that how you measure it when you ask for a pay rise? They're like, and how much do you realistically expect here? And you're like, 600 Oatlys.
Yeah, I'm 3 months behind on the mortgage, but I've got to make a mean brew.
Fucking throwing it at bees when they're outside your house. No, I don't have, I kind of switch it up, but it's got four settings, this milk frother. So it's like, you can do like cold froth when you make an iced coffee, which I fucking love iced coffee, so that's great. You do like mega froth, which is just ridiculous. You can like cut it up with a knife and fork. But there is the kind of
mega froth. That's a nightclub you go to, isn't it? Yeah.
But there's also the kind of hot milk, which does what you said. Like it just, yeah, get a bit of hot chocolate in there, or make a nice Dalgano coffee. You're laughing. Good stuff.
I think you have kind of won up me, because I was only mix it hot and velvety.
All right.
But because it's a hotel chocolate one,
yeah,
you get like these pouches of like hot chocolate flakes you put in with the milk, and it makes you a mean hot chocolate. But now we make coffee with it, but it doesn't do cold. Maybe I could hack it or rewire it so it can do cold as well.
Hack it. Just go. Yeah. It'd probably be easier just to buy one that does those.
Get my screwdriver on it and just see if I can, you know, mess with the mainframe.
It's going to be like one of those 90s movies, like the titular Hackers, I suppose, where they just like sit there at a computer and they're like, I'm hacking the mainframe, I'm losing the source code, and just like smashing all the keys on the keyboard, because that's what hacking is.
We need to run a diagnostic quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I'm sure it's pretty much the same. Or it'll be like one of those ones where I hack it and then, I don't know, it gives me a superpower. Maybe that's what'll give me my mundane superpower.
Yeah. Hacking milk frothers, that is a really fucking mundane superpower. And it only works on milk frothers as well. You can't hack anything cool.
Yeah. Maybe there's some secret underground people that, you know, like the Matrix, hacking these underground frothers.
You mean like a Morpheus? Oh. You can't ever go back to the real world of having standard milk.
Yeah. Do you take the Oatly or do you take the Alpro?
Oh, it's a tough one.
How far down the frothing rabbit hole can you go?
Oh dear. New lows are being reached this week.
Maybe.
Yeah. So what else have you been up to? I feel like we say this every episode, it's been a while since I talked to you. It's because we're both constantly busy.
Yeah, and have nothing interesting to say. I haven't confirmed for 2,000 trees.
No, mate. Well excited.
If any of you are going to 2,000 trees, let us know.
As I promised last time, I will 100% do a What Three Words post on Instagram so everyone could come to our barbecue on the opening day, our sausage fest, and help us eat some of the 60 plus sausages that we had to share between like four or five of us last time.
I really think you, I'm just a bit annoyed that you would do that without asking me, because what about if I'm bringing some gold? People will be able to rob me of that gold in the tent.
So you bring to festivals just gold to melt?
Just gold. Yeah, yeah. I'm not into cashless wristbands. I'm into trading gold.
There are people like that. Yeah. There are people like who are and probably with good reason. I don't know. I'm not clever enough to know all the specifics, but there are people who are terrified. I used to have a neighbor who was like, you know, he's always like, I love him, he's so funny, but he's always like, bro, it's going to be a cashless society, and then the government's just going to take all your money away, and then you're poor, and that's it, like, game over. And I was like, yeah, maybe, maybe not. But at the same time, that would be pretty scary, wouldn't it? Like, one kind of money. It'd be like that. Have you seen that Justin Timberlake film, Is it In Time? Where?
Oh, yeah, when he's got a time, you pay for your stuff in time. Yeah.
That's really cool. Maybe it'll be like that. Maybe there'll be someone in it, a character, who hacks milk frothers, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what that film would be called.
Shit.
the Froth Bank Redemption.
Anything with froth in it's bad, man. It's not a good vibe.
What? There's got to be a film movie that's got something that rhymes with froth in the title.
What rhymes with froth? Broth.
Froth. Goth.
Goth doesn't rhyme with froth. Well, it kind of does. It does. A little bit. It doesn't have a r in it. Not a proper rhyme. What?
Are you a groth?
The Frothman Prophecy.
Frothman Prophecy. We did it.
Yeah, there we go. The call, end it there. Because we're not going to do better than that. Let's move on to the guest.
Yeah. Well, speaking of never doing better than this, I think this was hands down one of the best episodes we've ever recorded.
Yeah. Do you know what? No disrespect to like any of our other guests, because we have had some crackers, but I don't know. I feel like me, you and Charlie just, we hit it off right away, and Charlie was up for it. Like we've had no naming names, but we've had guests before where kind of, you know, we start with a fucking stupid question and they just stand there like, why have I agreed to do this? Charlie was all over it. She was into it. It was great. And she, I don't know. Yeah. I think we all vibed off each other, and she totally got like the silly nature of this podcast, and she rolled with it, and it was awesome. I loved it.
I'm pretty sure we had a good 10 minute discussion on pigeons.
Birds. I tell you, there's some interesting stuff in this episode too. Like, joking aside, the stuff about how Brexit has impacted touring musicians, that is well interesting.
Yes,
well interesting.
Yeah it was definitely interesting to, I don't know, we all know Brexit was a great idea,
genius,
but there were, you know, there's a couple of downsides, such as what you're about
quite
to
a lot
hear
of downsides.
One or two, whatever, you know. So this is episode one of the Frothman Prophecies. Yeah,
but do you know what was nice as well? Like, I think it was really cool because obviously we got in touch with As Everything Unfolds a while ago, and obviously we set this up and it was cool. We chatted to Charlie, had a great time, and then I think a week later I went to see them. They were supporting Enter Shikari, and it was excellent. It was really good, but I turned up kind of. A little bit late. I didn't catch the very beginning, but it was so good. And and Shikari were fantastic as well. And you can tell there's a lot of, as Charlie goes into, there's definitely a lot of love for Shikari from As Everything Unfolds. And
yeah
really good. But so it was,
yeah. And we should probably, if you listen to this, Charlie, apologies that this has taken so long to get out.
Seriously.
Just Everything is so hectic. It's mainly me just not pulling my finger out and editing these episodes. But
well, I don't think it is. I think it's just generally life. And do you know what we say? Again, we say every time, this is just something we do for fun on the side. So yeah,
I'm too busy hacking hacking air fryers and frothers and fighting off bees.
Yeah, if you just like stop doing all that stuff, we could probably have a successful podcast here. But With your froth addiction, it's never going to happen, mate. You need to clean up, get yourself into rehab, and come back out refreshed and ready to do things properly. That's my advice to you.
I like to smear myself in honey and watch B movie at least 8 times a day at the minute. That's my problem.
That's a disgusting image.
Thank
the
you.
The Frothman Prophecy.
Do you know what's not? It's the Frothman. right. Should we crack on with the show?
I'll see you there. And just before we get into it, hello to everyone who did what we said last time and skipped the first 15 minutes of shit banter to get to the part where the actual real person who's genuinely interested speaks. This is Charlie Rolfe as everything unfolds, episode 33. Let's do it. All right, nice one. We're here today with Charlie from As Everything Unfolds. Hiya, Charlie. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Yeah, it's Monday.
Yeah.
Feels like it should be Friday, but...
You're supposed to be a bit more excited than that when we've just set the call
with
a guest.
I know. How are you?
It's a good start, isn't it?
I'm still a bit hungover. Charlie, you'll understand this when you unfortunately reach our age, because I think you're probably a bit younger than us. But when
Mate,
you have a hangover,
do you know what?
It's a two-day thing now.
No, it's already got to that point. Like, I remember being like a teenager and being able to, like, you know, I was having like vodka Coke, vodka lemon, drinking. And I'd wake up the next day and go to work at like 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then now I'm like, I share a bottle of wine with my partner and we're just like, and I wake up the next day and we're like, what? What is life? Like, we're like, right, let's order a pizza. Like, let's not move. Like, yeah. And it's just like, I was definitely the first person, but he's like, he's now caught up with me, like, in terms of that. So we're both just like, oh, that was a bit rough, wasn't it? And it's like one bottle of wine between us.
Yeah. I seem to find sometimes it's a bit weird. Like, I can have a couple of pints or, you know, like a bottle of wine or something and you're rough as hell. But then you might go out and have like 7 or 8 pints and you wake up fine and you're like, this doesn't
makes
add
no
up.
Sense. Yeah.
I don't understand what's going on. What's going on in my body, God?
I think some of it is day drinking, though. So on Saturday, I was out.
Yeah.
It's a rare occasion, but I was out with some friends I haven't seen in a long time. And it was like 12 hours of drinking, but it was obviously spaced out over 12 hours.
It's the worst kind, though.
So it was like, we got back to this place. We were staying at 2 a.m. And like, because we've got young kids, it's like, that is genuinely... I haven't seen the other side of midnight in like probably a good few years. So it was like 2 a.m. Yeah. It's like, shit, this is wild.
Yeah.
Whereas back in the day, you know, it was a 4 o'clock stumbling in through the door. Now it's like 11 o'clock feels like an achievement.
Yeah. No, honestly, like the latest I've stayed up recently, and it, to be fair, it was a session, was New Year's, and I'm never normally that bothered, but I think we were just round our friends and we hadn't seen them for a while. I was still drinking at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was like,
wow.
What? And I haven't done that ever. That, like, even when I was, I was like, and I looked at Jamie, my partner, I was like, Jamie, I'm not okay. This is not okay. And the whole next day, I was so ill. I ate like half a roast potato, and I was like nibbling like the insides just really slowly. Like, oh god, it's so horrible. And
half
it did. It lasted for like two. Yeah, I was like, oh god, this. And it's like, you know, New Year's Day lunch, and it's all just there, and it's just making me feel sick. The whole thing. I was like, oh god, but. But yeah, it's normally I'm not a late night person, but I think it was just one of those one off ones where I just had a really good night
You got to enjoy yourself every now and then. Come on,
exactly, because I'm the boring one. I'm the boring one in the band, to be honest with you. I'm like shut up, everybody, go to sleep, and then I'm the last person talking, as they always tell me.
Excellent. Well, listen, let's I feel like I said to you right before we recorded, we will talk about music, and then instantly, boom, I'm off on a tangent.
Yeah,
but let's talk at least about. About the new album, that how that's shaping up. So those three songs, Ultraviolet, Felt Like Home, and Blossom. I really like your first album, but, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, these feel like a real step up from that first album. I don't know what it is, like everything about it, like the vocals, the production, the instrumentation, there's more variety, there's so much good stuff on those three songs. It's does it feel like that to you?
Definitely. Like, that was, I think, one of the things that we felt about this album, was like, we just kind of came into our own a little bit more. And especially the first three tracks that we kind of released, were, they are kind of like the whole spectrum. And I think that was the idea, was that when we were kind of picking like what singles with our label to kind of like, you know, do first, you know, because there's still a few more to come, obviously. We were kind of like, right, well, let's, you know, Felt Like Home is like, we it was like the festival banger. That's kind of what we call it.
It's like big sing-along chorus.
It's like, it's the live song. That's kind of why we wrote it. It was kind of like always intended to be a song. And I remember the first time we played it live at, it was like a mini festival in Wales. And it was like 2 days it'd been out, and everyone was fucking singing it. Like, they were like, "Oh, it's only ever felt like home to me," and they were fucking loving it.
Amazing.
I was
that's gotta be an amazing feeling.
Oh, I was like, this is exactly what it was written for, and that made me really kind of, it made me feel really fulfilled. And then and then when we were on tour with Being as an Ocean, we Blossom kind of dropped like a, I think it was like a week into the tour, a few days into the tour, and we were like, okay, right, so we're gonna play it on the tour. And we were kind of a bit like unsure about playing it, because obviously it's a bit more of a kind of pull back, you know, ballady.
Yeah,
it's kind of like in between. Yeah. It fucking went down a treat. Like, and I think being on tour with Being as an Ocean as well, I think it kind of went hand in hand with a lot of their music. So, and a lot of their fans really, really enjoyed that song over a lot of the other ones. So it kind of just was lucky that it worked out that way, and people really vibed with it. It actually works really well live, and we all sort of looked at each other and went, oh, that was actually more enjoyable to play than we thought it was going to be. So
correct me if I'm wrong, am I crazy, or is there a Mario coin sound in that song?
I don't know, there might fucking be. If John's done that, I'm gonna fucking kill him.
There's that like there's that really cool like little kind of electronic bit. I think it's in the verse, could be in the bridge, but it ends in what sounds like a ding, like when Mario hits the coin.
It might be.
I swear
to
God, it sounds like the exact same thing. Don't listen to this, Nintendo.
If you listen to it really close, like, you have to turn it up quite a bit. And again, I don't know if this is intentional, but I'm sure I hear it go, "It's a me, a Mario," at one point as well.
Yeah, that does happen. That's me in the background.
I also want to say as well, like, I don't know if this is kind of intentional or not, but Kieran and I are old enough to have been there for new metal, unfortunately, for better or worse. And
fortunately,
there are some big Linkin Park vibes on, I think, both the Scratching and Ultraviolet sound. The Scratching sounds like it's straight out of the first out of Hybrid Theory. And Blossom has a kind of, it has a little bit of Crawling, I think. It feels a little bit like that. Am I?
Yeah. I mean, do you know what? I think it's one of those things where it wasn't intentional, like, at the time, but, like, all of us, I mean, we all love Linkin Park, like, especially Hybrid Theory, Meteor, like, I think all of us collectively agree, like, they are some of the best, like, metal, or just albums of all time, if I'm honest with you. Like, and I don't think it was an intentional thing, but we kind of, like, you know, there's a lot of bands that are kind of coming into new metal, like, there's this really big wave of new metal coming again. And we were just, and, you know, we've always been electronic, you know, we've got John, he literally does that exclusively, like, and we were sort of like, oh, this is such a cool opportunity to write something that's just a little bit more edgy.
Yeah.
And obviously, I know it's been done before, but it's kind of like in a new way. It's kind of like mixed with the metalcore, the post-hardcore, the kind of like different vibes. But like, I love Linkin Park. And again, it like wasn't completely intentional, but they are definitely part of our sort of like spectrum of bands that we all collectively listen to. So yeah, and it's kind of nice that it didn't happen deliberately. It was kind of just like, you know, John.
Well, it doesn't
John
come off
like,
as like
John
a rip-off
like,
in any way. It's more like feeling. Yeah, definitely.
A homage. It's a nice homage.
Yeah, absolutely.
But John loves his noises. Like, he loves strange noises in the songs. So, like, when he did that, like, there was, I remember when we did one of the demos, I don't think it made the cut for the album, because I can't remember what the demos were called. One of them had pan pipes in it. You know, like the things like Peter Pan play. And I was like, this is fucking amazing. And he was like, oh no, it's a bit silly, really. I was like, just a little bit, but it's kind of cool. But like, you know, so like, we always like to play with things. And, you know, John, because he takes on way more of a producer role now, especially with this album compared to the first one. So we kind of like pre-pro everything for the album, like internally with John. So John is a full-time producer. And we do it at his studio, and we kind of like, me, him and Adam are kind of like the three, because we kind of do the main songwriting, and then the George and Jamie will kind of come in and like, you know, sort of like, you know, because sometimes it's good to have an opinion of somebody that's not been there the whole time. And they'll kind of listen to something and go, why don't you try that? And we go, fuck, why didn't we think of that?
But you know as well that there were pan pipes on Meteora, right? Nobody's listening has pan pipes in it.
Does it? Fuck, yeah, I didn't even know that. We've just unintentionally created that whole album.
No, it's awesome. I mean, it just...
I actually thought you were joking then.
No, nobody's listening. Genuinely has pan pipes in it. Yeah.
Nobody's listening. Yeah, I'm going to go and listen to that after,
No Mario coins though.
No, yeah. I'm gonna have to listen to the Mario, because do you know what? It's one of those things I'm so bad at, like, when people reference things in our own songs, and I'm like, is there? And like, I was doing something the other day, and somebody asked me the lyric. I went, God, I don't fucking know what it is. I fucking wrote it, and you don't I'm hear so it, though, bad.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, I don't have it's a like clue. anyone who's good at anything, they're so deep within it that they, you know, they're just they're in there.
It's, you it's detach different. Yourself from it to some degree. Yeah. Like, you're the most detached and also the most detached from it. It's kind of like, especially when you've spent so long working on something. You kind of like, that's why, like, a lot of the time when we're sort of demoing, you know, I'm constantly listening to it, the songs and over and over again. And I always deliberately don't listen to the demos while the album's being mixed, because you get this thing, our producer and engineer, Oz Craggs, he's amazing, great guy. He calls it demo-itis.
Yeah. And
he's kind of like, if you listen to the demo too much, when you come in to record the album or when you listen to the album, it sounds wrong, but it's not wrong. It's just slightly different. And yeah, it's like, so you have to kind of like bring yourself back from it. And like, it's only recently I've actually started listening to the songs from Ultraviolet and kind of enjoying them, because I've just spent so long, you know, producing, doing teaser trailers, doing music videos, doing all these things, like content, and now I'm actually being able to sit back and go, oh, do you know what, like, this is a fucking sick tune. And like, actually, like, yeah, you know, if it comes on in my Spotify release radar, I'm like, oh, yeah, all right, I'll give this a crack, that's fine.
Nice. Do you find there's a big difference between your demos and the finished product? Because, you know, you get a lot of these bands who release an album and there's like, you know, bonus tracks with demo songs on there, and some of them just sound so different, you just don't understand how they got from point A to point B. Do you find that with you, or do you kind of stay true to the demo?
It's some songs are different. Like, there are, I was actually going through like all my Logic files and like earlier, because I was recording, just testing all the mics and stuff, and some of them, so the Ultraviolet demo, the chorus is basically the same, but the chorus basically goes into this completely separate part. So instead of the sort of like heavy breakdown bit, it goes into this like weird like melodic sort of section. And I was like, I completely forgot we even did that. So it does, but then, you know, some songs are completely word for word exactly the same.
Yeah.
Especially a lot of the later ones. Like, I think the songs when we were at the beginning of the writing process changed the most. And stuff kind of towards the end, as you kind of learn what the sound of the album is and you kind of know what the vibe is, it's a lot easier to kind of write, because we're at this point now where we're starting to write again. And we're kind of back to kind of square one again, where we're sort of like, what do we do? Where do we start? So we're sort of like, well, let's try this, and then we'll try that, and then we'll find a path, you know? And I think that's why the ones at the beginning change the most.
I guess when you're at the point of releasing music, though, you've been through all the process of getting it recorded and mixed and ready, that by the time you're releasing new music, it's fresh to everyone else, but it's time for you to start writing new music.
Mate, we were... So I think when we did our Welto, so Within Each Eyes the Other, we kind of abbreviate it to Welto. When we were doing the album release show for that, which was a little bit later because of the whole COVID thing and everything, we were in the studio that week recording the second album. So, and I remember like we did one of the songs from, because we were like, oh, fuck it, we're kind of in the studio, we're excited about the songs. Like, yeah. I remember we were sort of like, everybody was like, woo, Within Each Eyes the Other. We were like, here's a new one. And everyone's like, what? New one?
Because
it's new to me, like, you know. So it's like, you know, so now without our second album even out yet, we are already in the process of writing for the next thing. So, but I do feel like the songs for Ultraviolet, I am way more sort of I don't know, like, I think because we crafted them a lot more, we spent a lot more time on them, we spent, you know, a lot more. They just feel a lot more loved and nurtured than the first album. We sort of not rushed the first album, but it's a first album and you don't really know what you're doing, so you're sort of like, kind of, oh, okay, well, we'll put this song, you know. And we had a lot of songs, we had a lot of demos, and you know, it's a weird process. But then when we went around to it second time, we went to the same engineer, we went with a different mix engineer for the second album, but the same like engineer for actually recording it, so we kind of knew what to expect. So I was like, right, I know what I'm doing, I know what's going on, I know what Oz is doing, I know what I need to do. It made the whole process just so much more relaxed.
It's good that you have to cut songs down as well. We had Gordon on the other week from Raging Speed on, and he was like, we go in with like 5 songs and we have to like find another 5.
Do you know what though? It's so common. Like, because we work, I must admit, it's kind of something I'm coming to learn, is that we work fast, and it's a good, and I'm very, very grateful for it. It's like, we, in the last... So yesterday, we were all in the room together. I think Adam had a riff and we wrote a whole song, like, in one day. Wow. And it's like, you know, so it's like including synths, drums, vocals, like, you know, there's stuff going on. It's like, it's not completed, but it's kind of like a backbone of something. We work fast, and we've already written another one, and it's, you know, we could churn, and if somebody was like, you need to churn an album out in like 3 months, we could do it.
So it, tell us, it might not be the best album product. How's that sounding?
It's sounding great so far.
Yeah. Yeah, we're done by the end of the week.
Yeah, yeah, we will be. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm there at 6 a.m. tomorrow.
Greatest Hits is out next month.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that must be how AC/DC works. I imagine they went in and they booked, you know, like 8 hours of studio time, and then they came out at the end and they had 15 songs written.
It's like some bands, it is interesting, like, you know, talking to our peers and stuff, and it's like either one way or the other. They either go into the studio with like half finished songs, and then they work with the producer to kind of like finish them off and polish them, or, you know, whereas we had everything down to, I think because John is a producer himself, I think we had everything down to it. We had the harmonies, we had all the vocal ad-libs, everything was done to the absolute fucking T. So like Oz was like, well, this is what's going here, this is what's going here. I think maybe there was like, he put in a few harmonies, or was like, oh, this would sound cool. Or, you know, so it was kind of like, you know, mainly was done on our side rather than a production on the producer's engineer side. So, which is good for us because we kind of know what's going to come out the other end. Yeah, it's just going to be what we've got, but sound better.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been in a few bands over the years, and all of them extremely unsuccessful, and but what I do remember is if you're writing a song, it's the ones that you just kind of just play and they just come out that turn out the best. And if you sit trying to rehash something for weeks on end and trying to come up with new parts, and you end up just making it just worse and worse, and then you're like, oh, let's throw a different time signature in, or let's do something completely wild, and it just becomes just a nightmare.
It's all a psychological game. It's all psychological. It's like, you know, yesterday I was sort of like, I came up with like one line for one of the songs, and then I sort of did a bit more, but I was like, right, that one line is really good, but the rest just isn't quite hitting it. You know, I need to kind of sit back and take some time away from it. And like, we even, like, you know, we'll sort of get there at like 10 a.m. and we have lunch, and it's, you know, you sort of get a bit like tired of the song, you know, you're listening to it over and over and over and over and over again, you know. And often, like, when we're in the studio, like, John and Adam will be doing their thing, you know, with the guitars and synths, and but I'll ask for a pair of headphones. So this is just how I like to work, is that, I ate dinner just before I came on here, so
that's all right, so do we.
Yeah, and
I'll wolf it down.
I will ask for a pair of headphones, and I like, because I like to sort of like be in my own world, and I will just listen, and I will just absorb what's going on, and without any sort of distraction, because Jamie and George are like googling homage t-shirts and like looking up Louis Theroux t-shirts, so I'm like, I don't want anything to do with that. I just want to be in my world right now. And I sort of like, but then I'll just suddenly jump up and go, right, no, I've got something, and then I'll jump up and I'll record it, and I sit back down for half an hour. And it's kind of like, that's a really good way of working for me, because it kind of allows me to just sort of like create what's coming naturally rather than forcing something that isn't gonna happen. Because I think that's the one thing I learned from album one to album two, is that, you know, if it's not happening, just leave it and come back to it, because it will come, it just might take a while.
You hear that quite a fair bit, don't you, from bands who say that they put, you know, a new album comes out and then they've got a song on there that they wrote 7 or 8 years ago, and it just wasn't quite finished at the right time.
Yeah,
and then it pops up. Or I've seen even, you know, bands sound checking in DVDs and stuff, and then, you know, that's a riff that you put on an album 7 years later, and they've had it just knocking around for that long.
There's still time for you.
I think Muse did that with, there was that riff Muse used to. So like, my dad's like a massive Muse fan, so like growing up, and there was a they used to do it like live as like an interlude, and then literally, I think it was only like on one of their recent albums, they actually made it into a song. Is that what it is?
It's Will of the People, the one that sounds very glam rock.
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to ask.
I know the one you mean, when you hummed it. I don't know what it's called, though.
It's kind of one, because I saw them live like when I was younger, and, you know, and I remember, like, and it's kind of, it was always one of their things, like, you know, my dad's always watching Glastonbury with Muse, and just on repeat on the TV, loves it. And and it's always like, and it is a great riff, but even they, as the song, you know, like, people shit on Muse, but I do quite enjoy Muse. Origin of Symmetry is a fucking great album, just say, and Absolution, they're the two best albums.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's just testament to show that no matter what level you are at songwriting, sometimes something's cool and you're like, yeah, this is cool, but something hasn't come along yet that's right for it.
I saw on your Instagram as well recently that you're doing sing. I don't want to call it sing lessons, vocalist lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Is there? I know it's a bit of a stretch, but is there any way you could teach us how to be an engaging podcast?
I can try.
You thought he was going to ask you to give him a singing lesson, then?
Yeah, just right here, right now.
I'm already a top singer. Everyone who's been around my shower knows that. No,
is that a lot of people?
Just stood outside like a concert.
Do you find them so? Oh, God, after you. Mate,
if I think you're going to ask the same thing I'm going to ask, you go for it.
I'm just having a coffee bit.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, so do you find that more people or people that you're teaching want to learn more extreme music? Because I can remember a few years ago when, you might know it, or probably do know it, The Zen of Screaming, when that came out, and all of a sudden it was like, people were like, oh shit, like people, like screaming is a real thing. It's not just people just shouting down a mic. Do you find people are wanting to learn more that style, or is it more just people just generally wanting to sing?
I think it's more singing, interestingly. Yeah. I think because I'm always very open and honest about my level of screaming ability, I'm sort of like, if you want to learn like basic, the fundamentals, which I think, to be honest, is kind of how screaming works, because everybody screams differently. You know, you kind of have like the fundamentals to how it works and how's the best way to approach it. But then you need to develop your own sound and your own comfortability. And I'm still learning myself. You know, I do what's called, like, I think it's like a false chord scream, which is like all comes from the diaphragm, I think, because I was a singer first. That kind of came more naturally to me than a fry scream, which is kind of like what people call like the velociraptor noise, kind of in your throat.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
mine comes way more from like, and it's very loud and very sort of like draining and quite like takes a lot of air and a lot of breath. So it's taken me a long time to kind of build up enough sort of energy to kind of use that live, especially. So, but I do find that a lot of people, when I'm giving lessons, and I've given lessons to children, and you know, I used to teach kids as well in person. I've sort of moved to online just because it suits my lifestyle a bit better now and whatever. But it's confidence. That is 99% of the time. These people that come to you, they can sing. They can sing because they're coming for singing lessons. You don't come for singing lessons, especially with somebody that's like a more established, you know, singer, you know, or whatever, without having the fundamental understanding of how to sing. You know, a lot of these people are sort of, I'm like, you can fucking sing. You're just holding yourself back. And it's all psychology. It's all about like, and for me, like when I sing, it's like distraction kind of techniques. It's like, how can I distract myself from singing? And that sounds completely ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah.
But how can I distract myself the most so I'm not thinking about it?
Do you still get nervous when you play? And that's kind of,
yeah. It's kind of like it's a weird thing. It's like sometimes it's like shows that I'm completely not expectant to be nervous about. Like I remember the first time we did Download, which was, bear in mind, that was the first show back after COVID, but the show before that we did was to like 20 people in High Wycombe, which is our hometown.
Oh, shit.
Before COVID, because it was like 2 years, like in between, obviously, like, you know, because touring just basically went on hold for the whole time. And then the first show we did was the pilot, and I was like, I remember waiting backstage and you're sort of getting your IEMs on and you're getting all ready, and I looked around, I was like, oh, it's fine, there's only like a couple of hundred people, yeah, that's fine, I can deal with that. And then obviously, because there was only two stages and everyone was just kind of switching between them, the other band finished, and I fucking swear to God, honestly, I was like, I can't do it. I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this. There's thousands of people out there. I can't. I've gone from playing to 20 people to this. How can you expect? I have never felt so tense and so anxious. But weirdly, the last time we did Download, and every other festival, I've actually felt way more relaxed than I have playing in smaller rooms. And I think it's because once I did that first festival experience and I realized that actually playing to more people is easier than less people, it's sort of like a reverse thing. It's like, because when I'm a bit blind in terms of my vision, so when I'm on stage, I have contact lenses, but I have a really bad astigmatism, so my contact lenses don't work 100%. So when I'm at a festival, you're all just blobs. I can't see who you
thanks
are.
Thanks very much.
You know
that sign that I spent 6 hours making. You're not even acknowledging it.
I can
you're
see
just a
like,
blob to me.
Yeah, I can see most of it, but like, you know, especially when I'm moving around and stuff, it's like I don't focus on the people, I'm just focusing on the whole performance. So it's kind of like less pressure, but like when you're performing, especially like a floor show, I find, like, or like the stage is really level and you're like eye to eye with people, and I'm like, ooh, I can see every reaction that they make.
Yeah.
So for me, they're the shows that I get the most nervous about now, which is completely the opposite of what people expect, probably.
So that might be similar to, I'm coming to see you guys when you play with Enter Shikari next month in Manchester. And I, when I saw that go online, I was like, New Century Hall. I was like, I know that place. And I'm like, it's a food hall. Are they putting on gigs there? But then I realised there's a whole big upstairs. And actually, that venue is
a couple of people have commented on it and been like, what's New Century Hall?
No, I think it's like, I think they've got two floors because the history of that building is that it used to be a gig venue and like Tina Turner, Jimi Hendrix, Bob Dylan, like loads of these big names have played there. So, but during the day, it's like, if you go downstairs, it's just like, it's like one of those places where it's like there's six different like food vendors and you just like order to your table.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's gonna be a really good gig that though.
I don't know if it's like getting old and being out of touch or whether it's just there's loads of new venues coming up. But I feel like every time that a band puts on a tour, there's like some random venue in Manchester I've never heard of.
Well, this one's a lot different, isn't it? Because they're going with, I think Enter Shikari are going with quite smaller venues, aren't they? Deliberately.
So the thing is that I've only done this just from research as well, because I'm a massive Enter Shikari fan. So yeah, I'm on this tour as a fan and an artist. It's fucking great. So the concerts tend to be quite audio-visual focused. So a lot of the venues have new equipment. So the venue in London is a brand new, it's called Outernet. It's like a brand new audio-visual venue. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's either got a 180 or a 360 like LED screen, like the whole way around the venue. So all of the venues, I looked it up and one of them has like an LED ceiling. I think it might be the one in Bristol. So I was like, these venues, and that's why I think people are like, what? Why are they playing in these places? I'm like, I think it's because they've been selected because of the capabilities of the sort of
that
visuals.
That makes sense. Because New Century Hall is actually a new venue.
So. Yeah, exactly. So I think, and a lot of new venues are putting in these LED screens because they're so much better than having backdrops and things like that. Because, you know, you can do like really creative. You can just have a band logo or you can have a video playing. You know, it's such a much... And actually, LEDs are quite cheap to run as well. They're probably quite expensive to put in, but in terms of keeping it running, they're quite cheap. So from... I don't know, but from what I can gather as a fan from doing some research, that's what I can gather from why those venues have been selected. Which is very cool.
You'll have to get an episode of Louis Theroux or something playing on yours when you're playing.
But I was like, the first thing I was like, right, who's going to make the video then? Are we going to be able to use it? And I was like, I don't even know where to start with that. So I was sort of like, I'll make a little logo, doing a little glitchy thing, and that'll probably be it on the video.
No, but it's cool. How did that come about? How did have you met Enter Shikari before? Have you played with them? Do you know them? How did it happen?
So it's so funny. So we, all of us, in like, because they're kind of local to us. So they're from St. Albans. We're from sort of High Wycombe area. They've kind of always been like local heroes as well. You know, them, right. Young Guns and... I can't remember who else. But them and Young Guns are kind of like two bands that have come out of like our local area that are like the big boys. Shikari especially. I first listened to them when I was like 13. And like Tate of the Skies is like one of my most favourite albums. They probably hate hearing that because...
I know, I love it
too. I bet that they just... Yeah, I bet they're like, oh, I fucking hate that album so much. It's the first album. I love it. And I saw them on the Common... I think it was just before they released the Flush Flood of Colours. It was at the end of the Common Dreads era. I went and saw them live at Electric Ballroom. And it literally changed my life. I was like, this is what I want. This is everything. This is everything I want. Like, the electronics, like, you know, and the lyrics and everything was so powerful and so punchy and so exciting and new and fresh and... I just love them. And like my old band, we loved them. And then when I moved into my new band, we also loved them. So Shikari have kind of been like a staple in my life. And the similar story to with the rest of my bandmates, current bandmates. And then we sort of, our manager has kind of like, you know, just chatting to people. And he sort of got talking to their management. And our manager Jay was sort of like to Lee, one of their managers, he was you know, come down to this was our album release show in London. He was like, just come down. And I think it was one of those things, he was probably like, oh, fuck's sake, yeah, all right, I'll come to this show that you're begging me to come to, or something along those lines. I don't know exactly, but And since then, I think, like, I remember Lee was in our dressing room and he was like, that was fucking great. And I was saying, like, how much of a massive Shikari fan I am. And all of us, like, we were saying, like, how much we admire them and how much we love them. And then literally, like, I remember we got, so Jay sent us a message saying, oh, I've got some really cool news. And, like, we were like, oh, cool. And it was a Trash Boat tour, which we were fucking amazed about. And because they're on the same management. Mm. So we were like, oh, sick. And then he was like, oh, yeah, by the way, I've also got some other news. And we were like, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're playing with Fenty Shikari. And we were like, huh?
Like, that wasn't even the real news.
Yeah, no, we were just like Trash Boat. We were like, fuck, yeah, this is fucking sick. Like, we love Trash. And it's like, you know. And then all of a sudden it was like, sorry, can you just repeat what you've said? Like, that can't be real. And this was, I think, it was last year we played with them for, like, it was only, I think, three shows. We did two shows at Rock City in Nottingham and one in Middlesbrough.
Yes, Middlesbrough.
And honestly, yeah,
that's from Middlesbrough.
It was actually a very cool venue. It was like an old, like, it looked like an old town hall. I think it was Middlesbrough Old Town Hall.
It's called The Crypt. We actually talked about this with, I think it's probably The Crypt. Unless it is just Middlesbrough Town Hall itself.
It is Middlesbrough Town Hall.
Well, you are, like, better than 99% of the bands that come to Middlesbrough then, because that's the good venue.
It's not our show, but I'll take it. Oh, okay. But because it's got all the courtrooms in it, because we like went like looking around, because like their TM was like, yeah, have a look around the venue. And we went into the courtroom and we were like, lol, this is well funny. We can like pretend we're being prosecuted. And this guy who was like working in the place was like, get out of here. And we were like, oh, okay. So we were like, sorry. Because it's like an official courtroom. We were just like fucking around
in
it.
Like a judge's wig on.
But honestly,
maybe that's like the new version of like having a picture in an abandoned warehouse. Or,
honestly,
or
we were like, we didn't even get a chance to have any photos because we were just fucking around so much. And like Pearl, our photographer, like got the camera out, and this guy was like, "What are you doing in here?" And we're like little How school kids. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's exciting, so it's kind of like just through contacts and just through, like, you know, not, you know, they obviously like Lee came in. I think Shikari, I don't really know, like maybe they listened to us and they thought, cool, this is like, but Shikari are very good at finding young up and coming artists and putting them on their shows. Like,
right.
They seem to, you know, you look at what they're doing, these residency shows, which is kind of what they're calling them, like internally, is like, you know, they've got Cody Frost, who they've done a song with, and yeah, like, you know, they're a massive up and coming artist. She's really cool. And like all of the other ones, I'm like, none of these bands are like what you would call, you know, industry babies. They're all kind of like people that they've clearly found themselves and they're really into. And I really respect that. Again, it's kind of like cemented my love for them in another way.
That's,
it's
wicked.
Just, so yeah, it's, well, great.
You and me have almost got something in common, because when I was in one of these very unsuccessful bands back in the day,
there we go. God it almighty, was, never ends.
I just can't let it go. But
shit business.
Yeah, Shikari were. Yeah. I didn't want to be in it anyway. I didn't want to be successful. But yeah, Shikari was kind of just on the cusp of breaking through and getting big. And I remember we reached out to them about opening for them. And I think we had a gig booked, and we were like, come down, like, do you want to headline this gig? Something like that. Anyway, we got a response from them. They were like, we'll come down and do it. And then, a couple of months later, they obviously got booked on a much bigger, better tour. I'm like, sorry guys, we're gonna have to cancel that gig. And I think if you log into our band MySpace, I think we still
it's
have
still
a message from Shikari saying sorry.
You should post that on the socials. That would be a good content.
Well, I'm hoping maybe if you speak to them, and then I haven't talked to the rest of the band for like 10 years or something, well, apart from one of them, maybe you speak to them and then we'll get the band back together, and then we'll go from there.
Kieran could
it's so funny.
I don't want to put any pressure on you as well, Charlie, but I've paid 60 quid for a babysitter for this.
Oh, okay. So, okay. Yeah. No, it's fine. You're going to get your money.
If you call
worth,
me a
worry.
Blob, I'm going to be fucking furious.
Do you know what? Actually, I was going to ask you about your contact lenses, because this is how boring we get on this podcast. So I have an astigmatism as well. Mm-hmm. And does your contact lens, when you put it in the dodgy eye, does it, like, sometimes you blink and it feels like it's coming off your eyeball?
Oh, mate, the whole time. No, mine feel in both my eyes the whole time like they're almost going to come out. And I've been told, and because I have daily ones, and I have been told by my like optician, they were like, oh, you know, like, if you could get monthly ones, or, you know, like the ones you put in the solution, and they will be better for astigmatism. I'm pretty sure they, I, I'm something like that. And I was like, because I've got the astigmatism contact daily ones that I have to pay fucking double the price for.
Wow. Yeah, just because your eyes are slightly different shape.
And also, just to make it even more convenient, I have different prescriptions, so I have to buy two different boxes. So it's like £50 every time I want to buy like fucking like 15 pairs of contact lenses. It's fucking ridiculous.
This world we live in when you've got to pay just to be able to see things.
It's just so horrible. And like on top of that, I've got a blind spot in my left eye as well, in my central vision. In my microphone lens, so I'm just like, do you know what, just fucking, it's so expensive, like all of it is like, it's so annoying. I hate it. I wish I could just see, but I will not get laser vision. I'm so terrified of the idea of that.
Yes, my auntie got that, and I looked at like what it was, and I was like, what the fuck,
you're awake.
Literally pupil slicing, like it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's weird. My stepmom had an operation recently where she had a problem with her eye. Right, I could be getting this wrong, but she had a problem with her eye,
and it fitted a laser. Something to do with this.
Yeah, there's like gel at the back of your eye or something like that, and the eyeball was coming away from the gel.
Oh god!
So she had to go to this operation.
Is it retinal detachment?
It could be.
That
I don't know.
Like, but she had to lie.
Yeah, we've got them on next week. Yeah, I can't wait to talk to them about contact lenses. Yeah, and she had to like lie face down for about 2 or 3 weeks afterwards. It sounded pretty grim, but I know what you mean. Yeah, I don't know if I could sit there and have someone fire a laser into my eye.
I think, I mean, a lot of people have laser eye, but my cousin and her wife are like, so he's like a scientist, but she's an optometry scientist, and she's like one of the top people in the world. And she told me, and she was like, don't get laser eye surgery. And I was like, okay. So then, when I first got glasses, she literally told me, she said, do not ever get laser eye surgery. And I'm like, I trust you. Like, do you know what I mean? You're sort of like, she's not selling a product. She is just a scientist telling me, as a family member as well, like, don't ever get it. Because apparently it like deteriorates after like 10 years as well. This, and you have to like get it like redone and it's not as good, or like it fucks up and then you end up wearing glasses again and you've spent thousands of pounds on this vision. I mean, you're kind of like, well, 10 years, like, maybe it's worth it. I don't know. But I'm sort the of like, is, I'm just scared of the idea of like potentially going blind if something goes wrong.
It's 2023 now. I think we've all learned that we don't need to listen to scientists. If we just look at a couple of YouTube videos, we can actually make our own minds up.
True. So. The Tories
told us it's, you know, it's...
If you get two glasses from your kitchen cupboard and go like that, you can see fine.
Exactly, you can get these special lenses that you can see the flat Earth, and then
the rose tinted ones where Brexit's a good idea. Moving on.
Yeah, that's my favourite one. That is. Yeah.
So the
don't you know what? I knew every time Brexit comes up, I'm like, oh.
I know.
We've never talked about a Brexit on here. Maybe we need a really in-depth.
Well, I will
Brexit
fucking
talk.
Go in on it. I'll tell you everything.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'll leave it here. If we don't have that many subscribers anyway. No, if you thought Brexit was a good idea, you just stop listening to this. How about that?
Yeah, just
listen,
leave.
When I voted leave, right? So let me play with
I mean, you were taking your country back.
It all stems from being in a failed band. I was just so mad that I never got to tour in Europe that I just thought, fuck this, I'm going to make it difficult for everyone else. Yeah. If I'm going down, you're coming down with me.
But speaking
Go on,
Charles.
No, I was going to say, just to on it, like, it's one of those things that, like, you know, a lot of stuff politically doesn't, you know, day to day, you know, like, affect me. And I'm obviously very grateful for the fact that it doesn't. You know, I'm kind of very stable and I'm very lucky at where I am in my life. But that fucking shit show has affected everyone from one end to the other. Like, no matter how much money you earn, no matter how much you live, you are suffering from the effects of Brexit. And we, just as an example, just as a personal experience, so not let alone the fucking energy crisis and all the fucking food stuff, and you know, that's obviously that everybody is suffering, but on top of that, it's like, so we have to pay £1,000 every year to basically have a form that tells France, because obviously that's where you go, Calais, what equipment we're bringing in, to that's obviously not being taxed because we're not selling it effectively. It's basically a carnet, and it's what every band that would come from America would have to have, but obviously we now have to have it.
Yeah.
But we're just like, what the fuck is this? Because we've never had to do this. But the funniest part is that when you turn up and they're like, I don't know what this is. And you're like,
jeez. It's a big hit, £1,000, isn't it? It's not like, if it was 20, 30 quid, you'd be like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, but it's frustrating because it's like, we're at this point where we can afford things like that, right? But there are bands, and ourselves included, like, we toured the EU in like 2018, 2019, before Brexit. We just booked a Eurotunnel and just drove. Like, yeah. We didn't have to visas or any of that shit. We didn't have to look into it. We didn't have to be a limited company. Nothing. It was like you just got on and you drove and you played a gig and you went home. Like you would driving to Manchester or Glasgow or wherever you go, right?
Mm.
Whereas now it's like, you know, you get your passport stamped every time you go through the fucking thing. And it's even that in itself is bizarre. I had no stamps in my passport because I'd only ever been to Europe. So I was like, now I'm like flicking through and there's hundreds of them.
But you feel ashamed of it as well. I don't know if you do. I travel for work occasionally. And the times I've been through, you kind of, when they're looking you in the eye while they're going over your passport, you almost want to be like, oh, I'm not one of those. I'm not one of them. But you're playing Germany as well soon, aren't you? So you must feel the same. You must be like, you just open every night with going, we didn't think that was a good idea. First off,
mate, I did a podcast once. I think it was on that first tour that we ever did before Brexit. Well, I think the vote had gone through, and I was so drunk. I ended up in hospital. I was so drunk. But I did an interview, and it never saw the light of day because all I did was, to every answer I said, was fuck Brexit.
Wow.
So that's how passionately I feel about this. Yeah. But I independently am entitled to an Irish passport, which I'm in the process of getting.
Nice.
So it's kind of because my family are from Ireland and stuff. So I'm sort of like, okay, well, I'm okay as an individual, but it doesn't help the band as a whole. I can go and fucking play to a backing track, but it isn't going to like help. And it's so frustrating and it's so sad for bands that are like, you know, half the size or quarter the size of us that might just want to go out and play a show in Paris or in fucking Belgium. Mm. Yeah, just something that's like exciting and new to a new audience. And they can't do that because it costs them. And you know what the thing is with the carnet as well? So it's £1,000, but that carnet you can't alter. So anything you put on that carnet has to be the only thing you bring through. So say like, this is my old microphone, okay? So say this was on my carnet, okay? So my SM58 was on my carnet. I can't take this. I can only take this.
How much do they check this though? So do they actually do like an inventory with you, or it's probably not worth the risk?
There are people that don't do it, and you can not do it, but you will have to pay tax on every single thing down to a battery. Down to a Duracell battery. Oof. Tax on every single thing. And you will get it back when you come back into the country. But you tell me any band of that size that's not paying for a carnet that has enough money to pay up front the amount of tax that they're going to pay on every single piece of music equipment they're bringing and merch.
Imagine them going through and thinking, you said there was a red patch cable on your list and this one's a blue one, so that's going to be another 500 quid or something.
But
like
the, do you know what the hilarious thing is? And I always bring this up, and I'm not passionate about a lot of things. Well, I am, but this I'm very, very passionate about. Like, this is one of my things. And it's like, so the whole idea, I didn't vote for Brexit and I do not agree with it, but the whole idea of it with the people that were was, we're going to bring back work to Britain, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to bring back industry to Britain. Where do we get our merch printed now when we go to Europe? We get it printed in Germany. Where did we used to get it printed? We got it printed in the UK and took it over. No, we don't do that now. We get it printed in Germany so we don't have to pay import tax.
See, that's really interesting.
And where do we hire people from? We hire people from fucking Europe, because then we don't have to pay for the, or they don't have to go through the hassle of coming back into the UK with all that stuff. Yep. It's so backwards thinking that we're going to bring industry back. I'm like, no, you haven't. You've actually changed. You've turned it the other way around. For us, we now get our merch printed by Impericon out in Germany, and then they give us our merch, and then we give it back to them before we leave. That's what every band does. And I can tell you now, that is what every single band does.
It was like, it felt like the whole thing was, we're going to take back control and all this other crap. And really, I think it was just a lot of people that were angry at dinghies.
It was a facade, wasn't it? Really?
It was a joke.
Let's talk about UK touring.
Let's talk about something nice.
God. That's not to wear anything that's, you know, important or relevant. Let's talk about something completely
random.
We
never do.
So,
30-odd episodes in, we never talk about that.
Yeah, no. Well, this is something, right? I don't think I've asked any of the UK bands we've had on here, and it came up to me today to ask this. So obviously, you're a touring UK band. You must have a favourite motorway services. And if you do, which one?
Knutsford.
Fuck yeah.
We are 15 minutes from Knutsford.
Mate, so. The fucking... Like, do you know what? It's so funny.
I love
funny.
How quick you answered that as well.
No, in it. That's literally what I was about to say. I was like... We've discussed this a lot. It's either that or Becky Services, which Beaconsfield Services, because that's our local services.
Yes, that is the best one.
Yeah, it's that, and there's an, I think it's Watford Gap is the same. It's basically the same as Beaconsfield because it's the same franchise, but Beaconsfield Services is like our local. But we used to go there to go to Nando's because that was the closest Nando's. So like, you know, it's kind of like that is the best service. But then on the road, it's like we always end up at Knutsford's. So we're just sort of like, oh, it's a home from home. It's a home from home, Knutsford Service.
Knutsford City.
If you keep going a bit further up, you get to Sandbach, and that was voted the worst motorway services in the UK.
No, the worst one is that weird Tory one with all the farm like stuff. I don't know if you've ever been to that one.
It's Lake got District like one.
Oh, that's
I think realize. So. And
that's,
it's
that's quite nice. Isn't it's it? Got like all the homemade food.
Yeah, it's nice, but I can't afford anything in it. Oh, that's the problem. That's,
yeah, £13.50 for a sandwich.
There's no great.
It's like you go in and they've got like a jam stall, and you're like, I don't belong here.
Yeah, this is me.
Listen, I'm very passionate about. I got corrected by my sister recently because she lives in Watford, and I said Beaconsfield Services, and she said no, it's Beaconsfield. So I got corrected because we were down there recently. So how far are you from Watford then? Because my geography is shite. So to me, because we're up north, down south is like if you're in Devon, then you're 20 minutes from London. If you're in, you know, Portsmouth, you're 20 minutes from London. Do you know what I mean? So how far are you?
I'm 15 minutes from Watford. Drive. 15 minutes
right drive. Okay
so I'm right, very very question. Close to Watford. I have friends from Watford, so.
What's High my Wycombe next question like? If you had to describe High Wycombe in three words, what would
horrid
it? horrid
just horrid yeah. Fine. Yeah, it's not an inspirational place. It's
quite
not
nice when
like,
I googled it earlier. I was like, it's always interesting where people are from.
So
I find that
there's like, so I live in like, so we kind of say like High Wycombe, but we all kind of live in like, well, like we don't live in the town center, we kind of live like all like in surrounding, because like the southeast is kind of just full of like little like towns and villages around big towns.
Yeah,
I mean, that is just the UK in general, to be honest.
It is.
But It and it's kind of like, so we're in like the kind of little towns which are quite nice, and you know, we're quite lucky. I'm on an underground line, so I've got like access into London. It's the fucking last stop, but I can get there. You know, it takes a fucking hour and a half, but it's at least
but it only takes 2 hours from Manchester.
It takes me an hour and a half, and I'm literally less than 25 miles away, so it's ridiculous. But so that's why I'm like, I'm lucky that it's there, but it's kind of shit at the same time. So, but High Wycombe is not, I mean, you know, the only other band to come out of High Wycombe is Young Guns, like in terms of music. And, you know, there was a scene like back in the day, but I'm pretty sure now there's only like one music venue in the whole, wow. And it's quite a big town. It's not, it's kind of like, so it's probably like maybe three quarters of the size of like Milton Keynes. I don't know if you kind of
it's relatively
a good
big
reference,
then. It's
but
not,
like,
it's not a time
so town. It's quite big, and it's like got one music venue, and even and that is it's shit, because all the venues that we played when we were up and coming have all closed down. So like I really feel bad for like a lot of kids in like college or you know, bands that are like trying to like make their wave into like that. But it's, and even like I remember when we saw it in Nishikori last time, we were talking to Chris and he was like, oh, is this venue still there? I was like, nope. Is that venue? We played High Wycombe. Is that venue still there? Nope. Yeah. All gone. They're all gone. And it's such a shame. And again, it's something I'm very passionate about, is that the new generation of like musicians and stuff. And I'm not even that far into it, but I'm very passionate about making sure that the next lot of people get a chance as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
local
it's
music
such a shame that, yeah, you know, we go to local gigs and, you know, stuff like that. Just, you know, we just often just go and like have a beer, have a laugh and just watch some bands. Like it's just part of what we do, but it's just such a shame that more and more of these places are shutting down. And it's just, it's, and especially in places where we live, like kind of in these smaller towns, you know, London, there's always going to be venues, there's always going to be big places to go and watch gigs. But even in London, there's smaller places. I mean, even like the Black Heart, which is a very reputable venue, very like, you know, a lot of bands have played there. During the pandemic, they had to do like a crowdfunder to basically stay open. It's just mental. And I'm like, you know, so if they were suffering, how were a lot of these smaller venues coping?
I remember, I don't know, did the Deaf Institute ever get bought out, Kieran? Or was it?
Do you know what? I don't know.
That was one of my like favourite venues. And there was a two or three of them. It was like, shit.
Oh, it's a great venue. Yeah. We went to a new metal night on there when that they were kind of doing the rounds where these people just, it was just a DJ playing new metal all night. We went out there for my birthday, whenever it was, 4 or 5 years ago.
He looked like MC Grinder from People Just Do Nothing, didn't he? He looked like exactly the same.
MC Grinder.
It was wicked.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So I think that we won't keep you too much longer, but there's two more things we kind of like to do towards the end of an episode. And one is I've asked my 5-year-old to ask you two questions. He's like looked at you, he's looked at your Instagram. He's watched a couple of music videos. He really likes Felt Like Home, by the way. He finished off the last part of the chorus when I was humming it to myself earlier. So there's obviously something valid there.
Good.
So yeah, but we'll get on to Shameless Sunday in a minute. Let's do the lowdown with Logan.
It's a good idea. I like this idea.
It's good until he asks something that's
ridiculous. Yeah.
What's your favourite type of cheese or something like
that?
I'll answer that.
He said to Sergio from Idola, he's like, Idola, did you buy your cheese from Costco or something like that?
Costco.
Right, okay. Oh. Here's the first question.
On Instagram, you have lots of colour hair. What's your favourite colour hair, girl?
So what's my favourite colour hair, I assume?
Yeah.
Right, okay. What was my favourite colour? I loved it when I had like the really, really silver hair. So, and it was like my favourite.
And he was like, oh, Charlie looks like, because we my brother-in-law's fiance has often changes her hair colour, hairstyle. She's a very cool up-and-coming tattoo artist. And yeah, he was like, oh, it looks like Auntie Carly. That, yeah, I know exactly the one you mean. I think you've got a Vans hat on. That was the one he was pointing at earlier. If that's the one.
Yeah, I had blonde hair for like quite a long time. Like, and it was a lot of damage to my hair, but I am thinking of going back to it. I loved it that much. Like I grew all of it out, like all of the blonde out, and I cut it really short, which is why I've got shorter hair now. Because I was like, oh, no, I'm done with it. I'm done with the bleaching. And now I'm like,
do it again.
My bleaching. Well, I did bleach it to get the purple on, but now the purple's kind of fading out. I'm like,
Well, believe it or not, before I was an office job dad in my late 30s, I used to have a massive mohawk, bleach blonde. And I also had a phase where I had a second one, two, the one like on the side of my head, and that was bright red. I looked like that lad from Hook. It was terrible.
A bonus roofie.
Yeah, awful. Good
bandit. I didn't know you had a bonus mohawk.
Yeah,
bonus.
No, it wasn't bonus. It was secondary mohawk. In case the first one failed. Yeah. Well, there you go. There's your answer, Logan. That's the second question. I can't remember what was this one.
That was a good question, to be fair.
Charlie, what is your favourite bird? Is it a cock-a-doodle-doo?
That's a type
is
of
it a cock-a-doodle-doo?
I was going to say he's into multiple choice now, but that's not even multiple choice.
It's no, just like is it that particular bird or not?
Is it
basically
a cock-a-doodle-doo, the correct scientific name?
My favourite bird. You know what? I've never even thought. Well, it definitely ain't a fucking pigeon. I can tell you that for a fact.
Oh, yeah.
Pigeons are too. They're too aggressive.
And it ain't red kites either, because they are very fucking annoying. Like, round where we are, like, they're endangered, like, most places, like, in the UK, apart from where we live, where they're basically just vermin now, and they are so fucking annoying. Like, if you have your window open, it's just like, caw, 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 like, constantly. Like, if somebody's having a barbecue, that's it. Forget it. It's just going to be, constantly. There's, like, thousands of them circling, like, hundreds of them. Yeah, it's horrible. But, so they're my least favourite. I don't like jackdaws because they're annoying as well. I don't like any bird that has an annoying, like,
yeah, that's
noise.
Fair enough. Yep.
So maybe,
do you know
maybe
what?
Like
fair play already, because you've named about three breeds of bird and I couldn't name one apart from pigeon. Eagle.
I don't know. I kind of like little blue tits or like little finches, like the little birds, the little nice ones that are like good for the environment and they like keep the ecosystem in check. I like that. I like that vibe. I don't like pigeons because they're just fucking annoying as well. They have an annoying, like, and they always do that thing when they go, hoo, 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 hoo. And they do that one on the end and it really annoys me.
You're waiting for them to finish.
When you're walking through town, there's always that one that's got one leg or like a gammy eye. And you walk past it and it's
gammy
like, you know that it's going to take you down if you don't
get out
of there quick.
How close are you stood to these pigeons to notice their eye health?
I mean, they're quite brave. Mate, honestly, my town pigeons are something else. I can tell you that for a fact. When I used to go to the post office to post the merch, there's like a set of benches that like obviously people would like eat their lunch on and stuff. So the pigeons would kind of like congregate there. there were some interesting looking pigeons there, I can say that for a fact. And they were always just shitting all over the floor and being annoying. So I was like, I've decided I don't like you.
High Wycombe pigeons don't give a fuck.
Oh, they do not. So that's what I'm saying. I like the little birds that, like, you know, they do the nice little tweets and they're very sweet and they're very nice, like little robins and stuff.
I've heard robins are quite aggressive. I'm sure I heard somewhere that...
Really?
I'm sure I read somewhere...
I had a robin land on my head once.
I don't know if you need to Google this. I'm sure I read somewhere they're like really sexually aggressive and I was like, that's put me off forever.
Oh, probably.
That's ruined Christmas cards for the rest of my fucking life.
I only know, like, my parents are quite into like... not bird watching, but they're quite into like their garden and stuff, so they kind of like are quite into like, you know, feeding the birds and all that sort of stuff. So I sort of like get like secondhand information, so I'm sort of like, oh, finches and blue tits and like all that kind of stuff. So I know what they are. Like, we get like you know, my dog's blind now, so can't chase the birds anymore, so it's quite nice because we actually get birds in the garden again. So but the pigeons didn't care. They kind of figured out that he couldn't reach them, so he'd bark at them and they'd just sit on the fence. And that's why I also didn't like them, because they
ultimate
were arrogant.
Disrespect.
I didn't like them. Yeah, they were arrogant.
I'd like to relate to you that male robins will become even more aggressive during the period, this period.
I told you.
Some sort of period, as their levels of testosterone increase.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Like, I'm sure I read somewhere article that they're sexually aggressive, and I was like, genuinely, that card that my auntie sends me, like, I'm done with it.
It doesn't say sexually aggressive, it just says aggressive. I mean, I don't know what the difference between aggression and sexual aggression in a robin is, but I will endeavour to find out, and I'll let you know, Charlie.
I'll say my final favourite bird. I'll say blue tit then.
Okay, yeah.
I think because something like a, you know, something like a peacock is like quite a bit generic, because you know they're quite pretty, but they are also very rude birds. Because when I was a kid, one of them pecked me off a chair at a zoo.
Shit.
You know, they're just sort of like allowed to like roam around like in zoos for some reason. Well, the zoo that's like local to me. They were like, I was sat on a chair eating my lunch and it just picked me off my chair. And then ever since then, I didn't like peacocks, which I think is fair.
Yeah, it's fine.
That's fair.
My sister has like a terrible fear of seagulls. We went to, we're in America one year,
horrible.
And when we were kids and we were sat on the beach, and I think we were eating like a hot dog or something. And a seagull came down. I don't know if it was mating season or whether it was being
sexually aggressive
or just standard aggressive. But it like proper pecked her, and it was like she's like genuinely like to the point where like she can't walk past pigeons because she just associates that with, yeah. There you go.
I mean, seagulls. I mean, you know, it'd be funny. You go down to the coast. I mean, or any coast on the UK, and the seagulls. I'm not being funny. Even where we live, and I live like just outside London. I remember like being at school. And the boys would play football and like, you know, they'd eat their crisps and then sort of like leave crisps, or like they'd eat their food or like leave their sort of food stuff on the side, as
honestly.
They would, right? The fucking seagulls knew. They were like circling, right? And then as soon as the bell went, they'd fly down. They'd like swoop down and they knew. They like learned. So I kind of have this like weird like relationship with seagulls where I'm like, you're smart and I admire it, but also you're horrid. And they're just
they're
so rude.
They're like watered down vultures, aren't they, really? They're not waiting for anyone to die to eat the carcass. They're just
they sweep stuff out of your hands, though. Like, when you're down in, like, Brighton and shit, they like you'll be there like, oh, I've got some nice chips, and then some fucking bird will come along and nick them off you out of your hands.
The more we have this conversation about birds, the less I'm starting to like this species.
I quite like magpies.
I don't think a lot of people like magpies, but I quite like them.
There's an owl. There's an owl that lives around my house that can't, like, hoo properly. It's sort of like, it's like, I've tried
it?
To like, oh, and actually, I've got another story as well, I've just remembered. But this owl, it sort of goes, hoo, 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 hoo. It sort of goes up and down, and I'm like,
that's
what the fuck?
Terrifying.
Like, I don't know what's...
Right, that is going on the soundbite for this episode, when we put it out, that 3 seconds of you doing
that. Are you sure
that?
It's
Mate,
an owl? There's
honestly,
not just some, like, random dude still outside your window making
No, it's fucking not, I can tell you that.
The local
but
drunk.
There was, I live in, like, a very quiet area, so it's a bit, like, but this, so there was one day where I was like, I was lying in bed and it was like summer, so I had my window open and it was like 3 a.m. and it woke me up. It was that loud and it was like, caw, caw, like a really like weird like bird sound I hadn't heard before. I was like, what? So I was like kind of half asleep. So I just put my voice recorder, you know, the app on like iPhone. I just sort of put it up to the window and I was sort of like half asleep. I was like, oh, I'll figure this out in the morning. Like, I'm kind of interested, but I'll figure it out in the morning. And I was listening to it and I showed my parents and they were like, don't know what the fuck that is. Like, it's probably just an owl or something. And I've got like a family WhatsApp with my extended family, And a lot of them are quite into like bird watching and stuff like that. They're quite a bit old. I'm quite young in my family, so they're like, my uncle is like 75 or something. So like, I like sent it to them and he was like, yeah, it sounds like a peacock, that does. I was like, what?
Peacock?
He's like, yeah, it's a peacock. I was like, right, Alan, I'm not being funny. No one owns a peacock down my road. Like, I'm not being, like, there is no peacocks. And he's like, I'm telling you. And then my cousin who owns a farm, she was like, it's a peacock. My friend, like, it was the same thing. Like, you know, and she owns a farm. She's pretty, like, savvy to this kind of stuff. She's like, oh, yeah, the same thing. Like, you know, my friend used to own peacocks or a new, like, same thing. Like, it's definitely a peacock. I was like, what? Like, there's just a peacock just flying around. Like, in a housing, like, in a residential area. And then I heard it one night, never again.
Would any of them be available to jump on this call now? Because they might be able to settle this bird
debate. Honestly, I do still have the voice note somewhere, but, honestly, I was just like, you know, I was like, I've never heard that before. And it definitely wasn't an owl, but I was like, and I Googled, I even went as far, and I Googled, like, peacock sounds, and it was identical, and I was like, what the fuck, like, where is this, where is the peacock gone from now? Because I'm like, where is it gone? Is it just moved on to the next? Because they can fly, but they can only fly like short distances. But this, I was just like some, does kind it of just move around mystery? The town? Yeah, it's, and honestly, I was so bewildered. I was like, I'm in like a residential area.
Residential Peacock is another good band name. I think they'd be more of an indie, more of an indie peacock. Band. Though, yeah,
that's a early 2000s lad rock band. That
supported by Residential Peacock.
Yeah,
that's going to be the supergroup of Hardfire and Kaiser Chiefs. They'll be called Residential Peacock.
Yeah, but owls are like fucking brutal predators, aren't they? Like owls, if you ever read about them, like the fact that how fast they can fly, and they're basically can pick up a mouse running through a field at like 60 mile an hour and just whisk them off the floor. It's crazy.
It is. Right. I do find them fascinating to some degree, but not that much.
Right, I'm going to take us on a bit of a U-turn here. So we're going to finish off with one question because we appreciate that we've just chatted to you about birds for about 10 minutes. So every week on the podcast, we do what's called Shameless Sunday, and it's about our guiltiest pleasures, which we probably should rebrand it because we keep saying guilty pleasures and we keep getting told off for it. Yeah, it's no such thing as a guilty pleasure. If you enjoy it,
some people like get really offended by like that.
That's why we call it Shameless Sunday, because it's like, well, there's no shame in it. But I don't know what you can call it other than guilty pleasures. So we do post this on our Instagram, so don't feel under too much pressure, but we will post this. But what I know, outside of the world of rock, metal, anything heavy, what is your non-guiltiest pleasure that is a guilty pleasure?
So, one track. Okay. So I'll kind of tell the story, and then I know what track I'm going to pick, but I'll kind of tell like a little quick story. So my parents don't listen to metal. They didn't listen to metal or rock or anything like that. So my mum was like an 80s, like she was in, So my mum was like into like new romantic punk, kind of Susie and the Banshees and that kind of stuff when she was growing up. So like there is like a kind of element of it there. Mm. But my dad didn't get into music a lot till a lot later, and he was really into like club music. My dad used to go clubbing all the time and stuff. So when I was born, I basically, and he kind of got into like Oasis, because obviously like I was born in the 90s, so that was kind of like what was around at the time. And so a lot of dance music was kind of part of my like upbringing, which is why I think a lot of like why I'm very into like bands like Enter Shikari and myself, like with the band I'm in, like as I ring forwards, it's like I'm very into like the electronic side of like music. So one of my guilty pleasures, and it always gives me like really nice nostalgic feelings, but it's also got a funny story attached to it as of recently, but it's Set You Free by Entrance.
Great song.
Oh yeah, what a great choice.
You probably want to see
so,
this.
Yeah, I'm
Charlie,
so glad. You
literally like 10 minutes before we came on, I put a story on Instagram saying we were recording, and I used I said it's a secret we were chatting to, and I used The Key, The Secret by Urban Cookie Collective, which is another 90s like classic dance song.
Mate, I've got like a playlist now of like just songs my dad has on his playlist that I'll occasionally like add, like, because we're all sort of on like that family Spotify thing.
Yeah.
So I'll just sort of like add ones. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that one. So it's called like part of my upbringing. But the hilarious story is recently was that I was like on the way to band practice, and I was like full blast Entrance, like bum bum bum, like getting in the mood for band practice. So where we practice the band, it's kind of in like a studio, kind of like it's in like a old farm, so it's kind of like converted into like studios and stuff. So it's down like a bit of a country road, and there was a fucking massive pothole, and I didn't see it because it was dark and I was fucking vibing, like set you free, like fucking going for it, and a boom, fucking hit this burst my tire, like absolutely fucking burst my tire, and I was just sat there in Entrance, like on a fucking slope, and Entrance is just playing, and I was like, oh great, and I basically had to like wait for one of the boys to like come along, and I was just like, just Entrance, like boom, 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 and that's, now that's just engraved in my memory with that. So, but it is a great tune.
Something happened to one of my friends a couple of weeks ago, so I'd not seen him in a while, and I had a few friends over, and then he did the same thing on the way over, and he had to get towed home because it fucked the tyre up, and then that same night our TV died, so that was a bit of a run of bad luck. But yeah, it's a good song, that, and I don't know why I feel like that song is like, whatever year it came out, 1997 or whatever, I feel like that's the song where it's like 2 o'clock in the morning in the club where your feet are sticking to the floor and everyone's just like, yeah, ready to go home, but it's just playing and everyone's still having a great time. So,
but it's also got that. It's also
choice.
Got that massive like hands in the air moment where the kind of music drops away towards the end,
such
and it's
freak.
Just the singing with your arm. Yeah. Oh yeah, so good, great song.
Oh, it's such great. Like, it's kind of like that, or like anything Duran Duran, or like Adam the Ants, like any of that kind of stuff is kind of like a thing that, like, as I, like, when I was a kid, I was like, oh god, so horrible, like my parents' music. And now I'm like, as I've got older, I'm kind of like, this is, and Aha are like very fucking good. Like, I don't, there's like an Unplugged session they did, like, I think it was not that long ago, it was like less than 10 years ago, probably not even that. And it's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. Like, honestly, they did like The Sun Always Shines on TV and Take On Me, obviously. All acoustic, like with pianos and
perfectly
violins.
Harmonized.
Oh my fucking! It is. Yeah. It's honestly, if you have never seen it, it's I go back to that a lot as well. So they're probably like very two different things, but that's kind of like very much influenced from my upbringing. So that's my guilty pleasures, basically.
Yeah. Well, there we go. So we've talked about guilty pleasures. We've talked about motorway services.
Sexually aggressive robins.
Sexually aggressive birds.
Yeah.
It's been a great episode.
It has. It's been really good to talk to you. So we probably should let you get back to your evening. And just thank you for coming on. It's been really nice to chat to you. Good luck with the Shikari tour. If you see them, just ask them just to
remind them.
Just message me back.
Yeah.
I mean, this was 18 years ago, but you don't forget.
I'll let them know.
And when is Ultraviolet out? What date's that? Roughly.
I think it's the 21st of April.
Okay, nice.
I'm saying that with an inflection on my voice because I'm not sure, and I'm going to check my calendar really quickly.
You've got 10 seconds.
It is the 21st. It's the 21st of April.
Excellent. Cool. No,
confirmed.
Well,
everyone set a reminder. Yeah, we're looking forward to it, and hope the tour goes well.
Yeah. Cheers, Charlie. Cheers for taking the time to chat with us, and catch you in Manchester. And actually, and we won't go into it because we've talked about this festival every episode for some reason, 2000 Trees in Summer.
Yes. Yep. Yes. We shall.
Nice. Well, thanks
so much.
Watch
out for the pigeons.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Cheers, Charlie.
Okay, so let's hit this outro. So Graham's just been telling me about the Super Mario movie.
Yeah.
And I want to sum it up in 5 words.
It's a me, Mario. Good.
It's a me Mario, isn't it?
Where's he from?
I don't know.
Do you know, I'll say this. I had some reservations about Chris Pratt's accent because I thought he was like, you know the thing where you're like, why are they using like Chris Pratt? Why not just use the fucking voice of Mario? And then you're like, okay, I get it, because maybe the voice of Mario guy would be annoying after like an hour and a half listening to that. But yeah, he was
woohoo!
He's pretty good. Charlie Day's Luigi, though, that is inspired casting. Perfect.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. But back onto the subject of this episode. Thank you very much, Charlie, for coming on. Really enjoyed chatting to you. That was, it was wonderful.
It's just a dream when someone comes on and they just like instantly get what it's about. And, you know, because I don't think many people do. Yes. And it's not their fault that they don't get it either, because let's face it, we are fucking weird as a podcast.
I think the thing is that the way that this kind of goes when we book people to come on is, it's, you know, we have a bit of an email introduction. Yeah. We chat about, you know, when they can come on. Yeah. We just say, you know, we'll be like 45 minutes for an hour, whatever. It feels a bit weird to be like, by the way, remember what your favorite choice of sandwich is when you come on. Yeah. And, you know, we're going to ask you about, you know, what colour your underwear is or whatever. But
do we do that? I'm pretty sure we don't do that.
I keep trying to every episode, but you take it off the notes every time.
I'm not telling you. You have to find out. And, you know, we do ask things like, what, you know, if your band was a meal, what meal would it be? Which is just yeah.
Real talk. So, yeah, I've not managed to catch them live yet, and I would very much like to.
I would do that. I would everyone check out As Everything Unfolds, and the album is now out, because obviously we are way too slow on this, so the album the album's out.
And not the album we're talking about in the interview, the follow-up to that album is now out. Yeah, this is
The Greatest Hits is now available on iTunes.
This is the future. I've rewired my Velvet Eyes and sent us 4 years into the future.
Mate, I'll tell you what, that Frothman prophecy is coming true. I'll catch you next time, Kieran.
All right, happy frothing.
Peace.